Following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Boot computer. List of today's guests. Signing in chat room. Lining up news article. Checking level. Adjusting cam. Secure wire connection. Restart computer. Checking video feed.
With all she's got to do, you'd think Nicole Sandler was a one-woman band. Well, she is, and she's ready for another show. And now, here's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
All right, welcome to a Monday. You know, as if Mondays aren't bad enough. Oh, we've got a good one to start off with today. By the way, John Nichols of The Nation will be here. So, you know, I was realizing late last week that I never spoke to John Nichols at the end of 2021, beginning of 2022, to go over the nation's progressive honor roll. It's something they do every year at the end of the year. And for at least like the last 10 years or more, every year I do a segment with John Nichols going over, you know, the progressives worth honoring. And, you know, we need that every once in a while. Because we could use a little boost of enthusiasm, you know, and there's no way to do that, like, you know, like spotlighting some people who are doing great work. So I reached out to my contacts over at The Nation and said, hey, I realized I never spoke to John this year about the honor roll, would love to have him on. And they got back to me right away and said, John would love to join you. And very coincidentally, John's got a new book being released on Tuesday, of all things. So John Nichols' new book is called Coronavirus Criminals and Pandemic Profiteers, Accountability for Those Who Caused the Crisis. And so we'll talk about that. And we'll give a cursory look at the Progressive Honor Roll. I'll link to it so you can read it for yourself. But we've got other things to talk about. So John Nichols will be joining us in just a little while. Before we get there, I got to say, I knew better than to turn on Bill Maher Friday night. So Bill Real Time started up its next season. You know, he takes off for the holidays and he was back. And the thing is, Bill Maher has been a bit of a COVID denier. He's a curmudgeon. He's gotten progressively less funny with each passing year. Now, just to give you a little background, I used to be a huge Bill Maher fan. And in fact, in 2008, I was hosting a morning show on the then progressive talk station in South Florida called 940 Winds. It was owned by Clear Channel. And, you know, I had a decent book. I actually did better in the monthly than the WIOD, the Rush Limbaugh station, which, you know, we shared a wall. They were right next door to us. They got all the resources. They got all the money. We were the ugly stepchild, and I did better than them. So go figure. They fired me the Friday before the Democratic convention was to begin. That was the year Obama was nominated the first time. Right. So this is where I was. And Bill Maher was coming to Miami for a concert. And so he came on my show and we started out with the niceties. I reminded him that we shared a stage together at a ASPCA telethon in Los Angeles many years ago. Same place where I met Betty White that year. And, you know, buttered him up a little bit, made fun of the venue that he was performing at, which was the Jackie Gleason Theater in Miami Beach, which the geniuses have dubbed the Fillmore. The Fillmore was in San Francisco. And then there was a Fillmore East in New York. Florida has no connection to the Fillmore. It's a non sequitur. So anyway, they have the cachet of the Jackie Gleason Theater, and they call it the Fillmore. That's a Florida thing. Anyway, so I got it started like that. And then I said to Mr. Maher,
now, we're running commercials for your show here, and before we get into the meat of the interview, I have a little bone to pick with you.
Uh-oh.
I have restless leg syndrome.
You?
I have had restless leg syndrome for years. It's in the ad, and I hear it constantly, and I scream back at it, and what you say is, you know, the drug companies, they make up the disease to have the pill, and has anybody ever heard of restless leg syndrome? Yes!
Really?
And I never knew it was a thing. And I was working at a radio station in San Diego for a little while, and I was going through a particularly bad bout of it. And I came in one morning, and my partner doing a morning show said to me, "What's wrong with you?" And I said, "I'm not sleeping. I have this weird thing in my legs. It feels like there's something crawling around inside of them. And every time I go to lie down, I got to get up and move. I can't lie. And it wakes me up and it keeps me awake." And people started calling. This was 10 years ago. People started calling and saying, "It's a thing. It's called restless leg syndrome." Sure enough, I went online. There were support groups. Bill, it's not funny.
It's not funny.
It's not funny.
It's well, not funny.
Know, neither is he.
Took away everything in my act that affected someone in the world, I'd have no act.
Well, believe me, there's plenty that you talk about that's
right. Not funny.
That is also not funny when you think about it.
Right. I mean, the world is a pretty serious.
Yeah.
And the condition it's in right now, extremely serious. Place.
Yes. And if you don't laugh, we commit suicide or something.
I promise that joke is in my old act.
Okay, so
it will not be done.
It went on like that. He still kept going on. Well, I think you know they're it's a Band-Aid they're doing. It's not really treating the cause. He's not a doctor. He doesn't know shit. It's probably something you're eating. Well, I have gone vegan, and guess what? I still have restless leg syndrome. So Bill Maher, shut the fuck up. So now, Friday night, he comes back on the air. There was nothing else on. I'm like, all right, turn him on. We'll see how long I last. Well, I didn't last very long because he started in with this shit like, like this.
I'm done with COVID.
Oh, wait a minute. That's not his original. Oh, shoot. Hold on. Let me get his original, the original line. Is this it? Okay, this must be it. Here we go. This is the first clip because you got to hear them in order. So this is Maher.
In Europe, a lot of the leaders are now saying we have to live with it. Boris Johnson said it. We have to live with it. It's not going away. Treat it like the flu. Some of the things they're doing in the UK now that they're not doing anymore, they're ending mandated face masks, masks in school. That's gone. Work from home advisories. Nope. Mandatory passports to get into nightclubs and large events. Legal requirement to self-isolate. No, they're getting back to normal. We should follow this, I think. What do you think?
Okay, so that was his question. Now, the guests, he had two people on the panel because, you know, COVID. So instead of three, they have two. And it was I won't describe it. You fill in your own adjective, Barry Weiss and Congressman Richie Torres from New York. So this happened.
We've been gradually transitioning.
This is Richie Torres.
I mean, the public health response has become less draconian and more measured over time as the pandemic has become more manageable. And that's because of the success of the vaccination campaign. The Biden administration has presided over the vaccination of more than 200 million Americans, which has been effective.
Yep.
But now that
now Barry Weiss is going to butt in. I'm done.
With this question?
No, I'm done with COVID. I'm done. It's like I went so hard on COVID.
I remember.
Sprayed the Pringles cans that I bought at the grocery store. Stripped my clothes off because I thought COVID would be on my clothes.
Yep.
Like I did it all. I watched Tiger King. I got to the end of Spotify.
I didn't do that.
We all did it, right?
No, we didn't all do that.
No, we didn't all do it.
Okay, well, here's the thing. A lot of us did do it. And then we were told, you get the vaccine. You get the vaccine and you get back to normal. And we haven't gotten back to normal.
Because not everybody
and
got
it's
vaccinated.
Ridiculous at this point. I know that so many of my liberal and progressive friends are with me on this, and they do not want to say it out loud because they are scared to be called anti-vax.
No, you fucking moron. It's not about being called anti-vax or anti-science. It's about being anti-science.
Vax or to be called science denial or to be, you know, smeared as a Trumper. I'm sorry.
Well,
if you believe the science.
Yes, I believe the science.
You will look at the data that we did not have 2 years ago.
Bullshit.
And you will find out.
You don't know what you're talking about.
Do not do anything.
You're right. They
you
don't.
You will realize
we're
that you
an
can
N95.
Show your vaccine passport at a restaurant and still be asymptomatic and carrying
That's true.
Omicron.
That's
and
true.
And you will realize, most importantly, that this is going to be remembered by the younger generation as a catastrophic moral crime.
Because people like you are telling them that. No, it's not. Read the science. You're right. Cloth masks don't protect you. So get a goddamn N95 mask that will protect you. And more importantly, protect other people around you. But keep going.
The city of Flint, Michigan.
All right, you know what? I want to skip this
80%,
part.
80%, I think, minority
she
students.
She misses
has just
the point here.
Indefinite virtual schooling.
Okay.
In the past two
Bad
years,
move.
We've seen among young girls a 51% increase in self-harm. People are killing themselves. They are anxious. They are depressed. They are lonely. That is why we need to end it more than any inconvenience that it's been to the rest of us. I think.
Right. We need to end it. We need to end it by ending the disease. People are still dying by the thousands, and you just want to proclaim it's over? And what about all the hospitals that are still overflowing? This woman doesn't understand. Thank goodness Richie Torres is there.
It's a pandemic. It's like at this point, it's a pandemic of bureaucracy. It's a pandemic of bureaucracy. It's not it's not real anymore.
Let's not forget that.
Here's Richie Torres. Here we go.
The death count. Of more than 850,000 Americans.
Hello.
Well, that's a
yes, but
so
it was
that's a squishy.
Yes, but Richie, it was a blunt instrument. Okay, if you look at who was affected by this, 803 children have died in the past 2 years.
So children, it only 803 have died. If you were the parent of one of those 803, I'm sure you wouldn't be so flippant about it. And what about the hundreds of thousands of senior citizens? I guess you don't give a shit about your grandparents.
2 years. In the entire country from and with COVID.
I guess I offer a perspective. I was a New Yorker who lived through
Listen
the early
to this.
Weeks and early months of the pandemic.
Yep.
And it was just a catastrophe for New York City, the likes of which we've never seen. We saw overflowing emergency rooms. New York lost more than 60,000 people. The Bronx
Hello.
Alone lost more than 7,000 people, which is larger than the combined death toll of Pearl Harbor and 9/11. I saw mass graves in Hart Island. In the
yep.
Bronx. I mean,
yep.
most New Yorkers saw a level of death and suffering we've never seen in our lives. And that's the source of the concern about COVID. I mean, I reject the notion that the response to COVID has been worse than the disease itself.
You go. That is Congressman Richie Torres of New York. And there was a big burst of applause. But I cut it this down so I could get in as much as possible. So, of course, Bill, Mr. All-Knowing himself, has to chime in here.
You ask for the COVID deaths by state.
Okay.
Per 100,000 people. The worst is Mississippi.
Oh.
My home state of New Jersey, four.
God. Well, I'm going to wait for it, and then I'll bitch.
New York, sixth worst.
Yeah.
West Virginia and Massachusetts are 10 and 11.
Okay.
Right together.
Yeah.
Could there be two states who are
Doesn't
more unalike
matter.
Right.
than West Virginia
Doesn't matter.
And Massachusetts? And the poster boy for keeping
Here
shit open
go.
Was Florida.
Yeah.
They're down at 17.
Okay, you're basing it on the numbers that the poster boy for the fucking pandemic released. Nobody believes the numbers because Ron DeSantis won't allow the records to be opened. But you're taking his word for it? Oh, it gets better.
So New York and New Jersey did worse than Florida. What I'm saying
According
is...
According to DeSantis...
Well, we did worse because we're a densely populated hub of international travel.
Well,
and
Florida
they keep accurate
Florida
records.
Should have done more. Florida is home to all the old people in America,
data,
so maybe they should have done
But the data is crystal clear, and this is beyond dispute, that the deaths and hospitalizations have been overwhelmingly concentrated among the unvaccinated. If you are fully vaccinated,
okay.
you have
but,
a far lower risk of infection and hospitalization and death.
But that's not even the issue we're talking about now. We
well, it is the issue, you fucker.
What
it
this is.
This
is saying it's Florida, like, stayed open. I mean, I was just in Florida.
Yeah.
I've been there a few times since this started.
Whoop-dee-doo.
New York has moved there.
The atmosphere is just different. I'm not moving to
the
Florida.
Atmosphere
I'm not promoting Florida.
Up.
I'm just saying AOC just went to Florida and had a good time without
had
a mask.
Had a good time without
having
okay.
a blast.
Okay.
And she got COVID. That's the thing that nobody says. She came to Florida. She partied. She was spotted dining outside with her boyfriend, not wearing a mask. And she got COVID. And they don't ever go there. Oh, my God. And that at that point, that's when I said, David, either we turn this television off or I go in the other room because I cannot watch this shit anymore. And then I sang him a song.
I just need you to shut the fuck up because nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Yeah. Bill Maher, shut the fuck up. He's an anti-vaxxer. Bill Maher only cares about Bill Maher. He doesn't give a shit if your immunocompromised husband or wife or daughter should be in the vicinity. I'm not afraid of the big bad COVID. I don't have to wear a mask. What a fucking asshole. AOC went there and she had a great time. She got COVID! What doesn't he understand? He wants to talk about DeSantis. He says, I'm not pushing Florida. I've been there a few times. The atmosphere was so great. Let me tell you about the atmosphere here in Florida. Shall we? I should play a little bit of the Florida theme song if I'm going to give you a Florida segment, huh?
Boy, Florida.
Okay. Ron, the Florida legislative session just kicked off in Tallahassee last week. You want to know what moron death sentence is working on? Ron DeSantis, let's see, hold on. Let me go. Ron DeSantis wants a law banning schools from teaching critical race theory that they don't teach and allowing parents to sue if they think they do. He also wants to allow employees to be able to sue employers who use, quote, critical race theory as part of their training. Now, it's not just critical race theory, which is not taught in elementary or secondary schools. It's an advanced law school subject taught in some places. What they're talking about is they don't want schools teaching accurate American history. They don't want to teach the truth about slavery. They don't want to teach the truth about our racist roots in this nation. There is a stipulation that he wants to be able to prosecute anyone who might make white people feel uncomfortable when recounting stories of slavery and history. I kid you not. This is the Florida Bill Maher wants to come to? Come on down, Bill. DeSantis also wants legislation that would prohibit state agencies from providing any benefits to undocumented immigrants. Any benefits at all. So if someone's sick and goes to the emergency room, let them die. They're undocumented. Or as they used to call them, illegal aliens. It would also prohibit state and local agencies from doing business with any private entities that may help people who illegally cross the southern U.S. border and settle in Florida. But no, it's not racist here. And despite previously saying that Florida's 2020 election went smoothly and with zero evidence of any widespread voting fraud, and by the way, a number of people in Florida have been arrested and charged with voting multiple times with voting fraud. I think there were three of them. They were all Republicans who lived in the villages. Go figure. Despite all this, DeSantis wants $6 million to create a new law enforcement office dedicated to investigating election fraud. He wants this new police force to be answerable only to him. That's DeSantis. Bill Maher, your guy. But the attitude down here is so great. People are walking around without masks. And many of us don't leave our homes for that very reason. God damn it. God damn it. I have one lung. So an idiot like you walks around spewing your COVID. You want to kill me? That's what he's promoting. And Barry Weiss. You know what? The two of you go off in your COVID-free, world and infect one another back and forth. You deserve it. And by the way, here in Florida, you know, the Surgeon General that DeSantis has been trotting out to show everybody, Joseph Latipo. By the way, he still has not been confirmed by the Florida Senate. His confirmation hearings haven't even begun yet. They will start this week because the Florida legislature is in session. Oh, somebody's calling. All right. You're going to get me off my rant. Hi, who's this?
I am just bowing down to my computer right now. It's Brother David.
Hi, David.
Dead on. Here in Lawrence, effing Kansas, we are seeing this spike, but they're closing the schools. they've done a mask mandate for the entire city.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's going to end up with the state. Because we actually have a genuine moderate Democratic governor here.
Wow.
But that's another story for another time. We actually do.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Kelly's doing her best to keep this thing together.
Good for her.
I'm a veteran of an old ACT UPer and a veteran of the previous pandemic that never actually ended. And I cannot imagine being someone with even a minor immunocompromised system.
Mm-hmm.
Let alone one lung. Da, 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 da.
Hello?
Now I know why somewhere around, and hi, your chat room. Love you, San Larissa's. We're all in this together.
Yep.
I don't care if
yep.
you believe me.
Yep.
True. We are. What I now understand after listening to what you just played, why in somewhere around 2018, this little thing went in with me and went, you're not dealing with the issues anymore,
yeah.
Mr. Marr.
That's right.
You're dealing with you.
Mark my words, he's going to have Eric Clapton on pretty soon to commiserate about the evils of mask wearing. Did you see how Eric Clapton went off the rails again? Now he's saying vaccinated people are victims of, quote, mass formation hypnosis. We've been hypnotized by YouTube. You know where he did this interview in which he claimed this? On YouTube, because he's a fucking brain surgeon. God.
Yeah, exactly. And this is part of the issue, Nicole. It's huge to me. It's one of the reasons I'm not a journalist anymore. It's only one, but it's the major one, is because facts have ceased to matter in terms of people comprehending them.
Got it.
And it's all about image, and it all goes back to Reagan. I'm sorry. It goes back further than that. But it all goes back to us going for image over substance
yep.
in 1980, and it's just been devolution ever since.
Yes, and the pushback, the denial of reality has been so too.
Yeah.
You know, during the, after I was fired from WINZ, right before the 2008 Democratic convention, another station that was a right-wing station, WFTL, invited me on for the last 2 weeks before Election Day to be the token liberal. Well, it just so happens the day before Election Day, Dennis Miller happened to be in the studio because the station carried his ridiculous show. And I was being typically me, and I said something about, you know, this all started going to hell with Ronald Reagan, and you would have thought I said to him, your mother sucks cocks in hell, because he took such personal offense to what I said, and, you know, then he stormed out of the studio and went to the program director and general manager and demanded I apologize to him, which, of course, I didn't do, and I was never invited back again, so. You know, but this is what they do. It is true.
I'll let you go because I know, and not just because my father's name was John Nichols, am I a huge fan of who you're going to have on today.
Uh-huh.
One of the minds of our country. The fights I used to get with my family in Oklahoma or Kansas, because I'm from the Midwest originally, at that time, I was like, the man's an actor.
Yeah.
His only life experience is to say things people have written for him in a way that makes people believe him.
Mm-hmm.
And everything has devolved, and it all reached its nadir when one third of us that actually bothered to vote in 2016 went for a reality talk show host.
Amazing.
With a paresis ridden brain and a marmot on its head. There's still more of us.
Yeah.
I have to believe that.
I have to believe it. We do have to believe it, because if we don't, if we give in and say, you know, they're louder. They're louder. They're louder, and they're more enthusiastic right now. We need to change that, and it's hard to do when the guy at the top is not lighting the world on fire. We have to do that.
Not being louder. Exactly.
Right.
We have to do it. Well, we the people.
Yeah.
I give you back to your show.
Okay.
Wonderful to speak.
Thank you, David.
Please don't have a heart attack in your rant.
No,
rant aware.
My heart's healthy. That's a good thing. The heart's fine. Thank you, David.
That's all.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care.
So needless to say, I was kind of pissed. At least I'm not alone. It wasn't only me. I guess Whoopi Goldberg apparently went off on Bill Maher today, too. I am just waiting for her to have, for Maher to have Clapton on to do the commiserating thing. Ugh. God, it's so frustrating. I'll tell you what, I was going to play this this clip from the Midas Touch guys, except it runs 5 minutes. And do I want to? You know, the reason I want to play it is because they did a really good job of pulling together exactly where we are. You know, there's so many different fronts that we're being attacked on. So, but on the front of the January 6th commission and what's going on there, you know what? I will play it. And then we'll come back and hopefully John Nichols will be here at that time. But this is important because it's more than I can effectively get to in 5 minutes, but Midas Touch can. So let's do it this way. Well, that's too big. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to attempt to bring this up on this screen so you can see it. And yeah, we'll play for you. Oh, I see why that's not working. We will play for you this Midas Touch video because we can. All right. So take it away, Midas Touch guys. And just know that, you know, we need to fight back. If all we do is sit back and let them win, they're going to win. But this video is called a coup in plain sight. And that's exactly what's going on. And we really need to ramp up to make sure this doesn't happen. All right, take it away.
To the Capitol, because you'll never take back our country with weakness.
It all began before January 6th, 2021.
We can now project that former Vice President Joe Biden has been elected President of the United States.
As Joe Biden's victory became apparent, the GOP hatched a criminal plot to overturn the election results.
We were getting ready to win this election. Frankly, we did win this election.
The plan? Disrupt the certification process, claim fraud, submit fake electors, and appoint Donald Trump president against the will of the people.
There will be a smooth transition to a second Trump administration.
First, they flood the courts with frivolous lawsuits.
They are.
Hoping for a quid pro quo from
they
Trump
did.
Appointees.
Yep. The Dominion voting systems were created in Venezuela at the direction of
Easy
Hugo
for her
Chavez.
To say.
They lose nearly all of the 62 cases they filed. An executive order is prepared for Donald Trump's signature to have the military seize all voting machines.
He could take military capabilities and he could place them in those states and basically rerun an election in each of those states. Martial law has been instituted 64 times.
Donald Trump instills lackeys in the Department of Defense and DOJ, like Kash Patel, Jeffrey Clark, and Chris Miller.
President Trump is purging the top ranks of the Pentagon after firing Defense Secretary Mark Esper, replacing officials with White House loyalists for this lame duck period of his presidency.
And why are they being installed after Trump's defeat?
7 states forge electoral certificates and send them to the National Archives as fake electors attempt to break into state capitals.
7 states have chosen a slate of electors for both Joe Biden and President Trump.
In those states, there has been an alternate slate of electors voted upon.
We can direct that the alternate slate of electors be certified.
We're fixing to overturn the results of the election in multiple states.
Attorney John Eastman drafts a legal blueprint detailing how Vice President Pence can evade the law and count these fake electors instead. The Department of Justice drafts letters to swing states, falsely claiming that there was election fraud in an attempt to throw the real results into question.
Clark reportedly drafted a letter to Georgia state legislators that incorrectly said DOJ was investigating accusations of voter fraud in the state and that Georgia officials should invalidate Biden's win.
I just want to find 11,780 votes.
And Republicans hit the airwaves to fire up their base and spread the big lie.
And if enough object, then that state elector, those state's electors don't get counted in the final vote.
There are a number of states that have come into question here.
When the process is complete, there'll be electors selected.
You can actually have alternate electors.
You throw out the certification and let the House decide.
There will be a lot of things happening between now and the 20th of January. A lot of things.
President Trump's first term's ending with action, and his second term's going to start with a bang.
What a sleazeball.
Key Trump officials meet at the Willard Hotel on January 5th to plot their takeover, as white nationalist groups like the Proud Boys and Oath Keepers stand back and stand by.
We'll be inside D.C. We'll also be on the outside of D.C. armed, prepared to go in if the president calls us up.
On January 6th, Donald Trump tweets out his demands that the fraudulent electors be counted, whips his army of supporters into a frenzy, and lights the match.
Can you imagine if Democrats did this?
So go home. We love you. You're very special.
The coup fails. But Republicans use the chaos they created as pretext to change voting laws across the country.
Republican lawmakers in at least 43 states are considering more than 250 proposed bills that would make it harder to vote.
And instill partisan vote counters who promise to throw away votes they don't like in future elections.
It'll be a lot sharper the next time when it comes to counting the vote. There's a famous statement, sometimes the vote counter is more important than the candidate, and we can't let that ever, ever happen again. They have to get tougher and smarter.
This is a coup in plain sight. History will judge where we stand in this moment.
You think?
Which side are you on?
Which side are you on? That is the latest video from the Midas Touch guys at MidasTouch.com. A coup in slow motion, I think they call it. And sure enough, again, great work. But now, as I thought would happen, we have been joined by our guests, and I'm thrilled to welcome back to the program John Nichols. He's the national correspondent for The Nation magazine. He's also the author of a brand new book out tomorrow. It's called Coronavirus Criminals and Pandemic Profiteers, Accountability for Those Who Caused the Crisis. Hey, John Nichols, welcome back to the show.
It's an honor to be with you. It's a great pleasure, Nicole.
Good to see you, actually, as well. It's always so nice to see you, too. I love that you're joining us on Zoom. You know, the way that I didn't know that the book was coming out, and I realized last week, it's like, oh, no, I never spoke with John Nichols for about the 2021 Progressive Honor Roll. It's something you put together every year, and I think at least for the last 10 years or so, I've always had you on to give credit where credit is due, because frankly, on our side, we take a lot of slings and arrows. We don't get a lot of credit, it seems. So I'd like to do that. And then Caitlin told me, well, just so it happens that John's got a new book coming out on Tuesday. So as my husband likes to say, we can kill two birds and get stoned. Yeah, but I should never say that without having this handy. Anyway, John Nichols. So real quickly, because I want to talk about the book and I want to talk about what's happening in real world. I will link to the Progressive Honor Roll, but who stands out? Who, you know, 2021 was a really rough year, and it should have been better because we got rid of Donald Trump, but it was still a rough year. So who stands out as deserving some praise for the work they did trying to keep us together in 2021?
Well, I think there's a lot of people that you've highlighted, Nicole, on your show. Mm-hmm. And so they won't come as total surprises. Pramila Jayapal stood out as somebody who fought the good fight. Cori Bush as well, the congresswoman from St. Louis, who really battled on housing eviction issues. And when the action didn't occur in the House, she went out in front of the building and, you know, slept on the steps. And I think showed that sort of inside outside commitment that is so impressive. But we recognized a lot of other folks this year, and we looked a lot at activists who are making things happen. Ajahn Poo, who's been very, very active on so many of the issues as regards caregiving. And, you know, there's simply no question that while Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema and others stood in the way of acting on Build Back Better, if you look at what was in Build Back Better, you know, what was put in there with a huge caregiving component, that was because of years of work by activists like Ajahn Poo and folks with SEIU and others. So we recognize that. And the last person I'll you know, give a special shout out to, or at least point attention to, is Carol Anderson, the author. And she did a number of great history books over the last few years. A history of voting rights. It was incredibly powerful. And her new book called The Second is a look at the Second Amendment and how it is steeped in racism and how it's been used to uphold white supremacy. And the reason, one of the reasons that I cited Carol Anderson, and I think it's so important to talk about her, is that you know, we have this attack on critical race theory. We have this attack on teaching a whole and real history. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that what Carol Anderson's been doing is filling in that whole history, telling us what really is in our history, not, you know, to beat up on America, but to tell us the truth of where we came from and how we ought to understand that if we're going to go forward. And so we really gave her a lot of credit in the list as well.
Good. And it's a great list, as it always is. And I highly recommend you read it. I will link to it. It'll be posted on today's post where I put today's show. It'll be at NicoleSandler.com/1-24-22. That's the format. I always post them. No paywall. So listen to the show. Read the post. But John Nichols, I do want to talk to you about this new book. You know, there's a phrase that I use. Opposite world. I've been using this for years, though, because that's where we are. It's like anything that makes sense, flip it on its head, and maybe you'll get some semblance of the truth there. We live in this alternate reality. Here, I'll play you the short version of the opposite world sounder.
Facts no longer matter. Reality is now fiction. There's a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, opposite world.
So, you know, it goes like that. I've got a longer one that spells it out a little more.
I'm sure.
But this is where we are. And so you write this book about coronavirus criminals and pandemic profiteers. And for the last 2 years, we've seen the billionaires increase their fortunes exponentially while the rest of us are just sort of circling the drain. Some of us, you know, less successfully than others. It's not a good situation unless you happen to have started out already wealthy.
You nailed it. In fact, it's funny that sometimes you read my mind, Nicole. It's funny. We have a big excerpt from the book that's in the magazine this week, and very thrilled that Newsweek just did a big piece on it today. And so there's a lot of attention to it. And that gives you a chance to sort of steer the discussion in different ways. The book has 18 chapters that look at different bad players, including the predictable ones like Donald Trump and Jared Kushner, who screwed up the supply chain, and Elaine Chao, who refused to issue a mask warrant or a mask mandate for public transportation.
Right.
And it details, as I do in each of the chapters, I detail the people who could have stopped a lot of deaths and didn't do so. And so those are the ones you might expect. But I also look a lot at billionaires and at very, very wealthy people. And, you know, when people ask me about accountability for the pandemic, I'm a big fan of congressional action. I believe in impeachment. I believe in censures and all of that. I am totally respectful of the need for criminal actions where people have engaged in criminal wrongdoing, and for civil actions, which I think are quite legitimate, something that Mitch McConnell went out of his way to try and stop with his liability shields and things like that. So I favor all these things. But to my mind, the most powerful tool is taxation. Hmm. And, you know, I think, I say it bluntly, that we should look at where billionaires stood on the day the pandemic started, on the day we recognized it as a huge threat to America, on the day that we said to essential workers, we're all going to have to sacrifice. Some of us are going to have to risk our lives. Mm-hmm. Some of us will die in this struggle against this overwhelming challenge. We look at where billionaires stood on that day and where they stand 2 years later, and I think we should just take their money.
I think so, too. So why hasn't Congress done it? Is it simply because Republicans don't like taxing the billionaires because that's their constituency?
It's a part of it, surely. But I've got to be blunt with you. There's some Democrats that aren't all that much better.
Yeah, well, I know that.
And so we have this painful reality that the one thing that power can usually agree on is that they don't want to be too tough on billionaires.
Yeah.
And my argument is that this is deeply, deeply immoral. It is deeply wrong to have put the American people through 2 years of very challenging circumstances, which so many of us accepted, not happily, mm-hmm. not easily. We know about the mental health issues that have arisen. We know about people who've faced real economic hardship. Again, we know that we have lost hundreds of thousands of people that did not need to die, and had, you know, millions of people infected who probably could have avoided those infections if we'd had a better job done by the government. But we also know that during this period, billionaires expanded their wealth at a rate that was exponential. Mm-hmm. The billionaires in the United States went from controlling about $3 trillion in wealth to about $5 trillion in wealth. So that's an extra $2 trillion there that, you know, moved over there. What I will say without a question is, you know, in the spirit of Franklin Roosevelt during World War II, in the spirit of Dwight Eisenhower, who presided over a 91% tax rate for the upper income, folks, that we should impose a pandemic tax. And we should say to those people who expanded their wealth exponentially, we're not even going to be very tough on you. We're going to let you be right where you were before the pandemic. Hmm. You know, if you were a billionaire before, you can still be a billionaire now.
Right.
But we're not going to say to you that while nurses had to go into hospital wards wearing garbage bags to protect themselves because they didn't have enough equipment, where bus drivers literally had to go routes in those early stages of the pandemic without protection and died at astounding rates, where people working in the meatpacking industry, you know, had waves of the pandemic, you know, rush through, and yet they were told to come back to work because they were essential, where all of these people suffered. Right. Yep. And other people lost their jobs. Other people lost their homes or were threatened with it. All the challenges that came from it. It is absurd to say to somebody who retreated to their, you know, waterfront villa or to their country home, turned on a computer and moved around investments and ended up, you know, $100 million or $200 million or $500 million or $1 billion. Or in the case of people like Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk, hundreds of billions of dollars wealthier, right? Just this unbelievable increase in wealth, so much so that they decided, oh, well, I've got so much money, I think I'm going to fly to, you know, take off into outer space. I'm sorry, no.
The most obscene, you know, there's a talk about, you know, community standards for obscenity, launching billionaires up into the air so they could fly around and then come back down. That's obscene to me. I can deal with a woman's breasts, but seeing that, I find obscene.
Well, you're right. It is obscene, and it's deeply, deeply insulting. It's deeply insulting to the people who took this seriously. And you know who took it seriously, right? Working class women.
Yeah.
People of color. Frontline folks who were working in tough jobs. Because sometimes they needed the money to support their family, and so they had to do it. But also, I interviewed a lot of these folks who were doing it because they felt they had a moral duty to society, that they were part of something bigger. And they said, you know, look, I know I'm risking my life here. I know that that this is dangerous, but I'm going to do this because we're all in this together. It's a period of self-sacrifice and mutual sacrifice and shared sacrifice. These terms were used again and again and again, but it wasn't shared sacrifice. And that's what I write about in the book. The simple fact of the matter is that there are pandemic profiteers. There are people who made massive amounts of money. And in some cases, if you use the example of, you know, Jeff Bezos over at Amazon, who is, you know, not some right winger, you know, or anything like that. I mean, in fact, there's some folks I think are probably see him as a decent guy, and I'm not here to pick on him. Mm-hmm. I'm just here to say, you know, look, at the point when those warehouses weren't safe, Amazon didn't take the proper actions.
No, they did not.
It didn't make the warehouses safe. People died, people got sick, and people who were whistleblowers got fired, right? Mm-hmm. I write a lot about that in the book. And the fact is that if we understand it in that perspective, then I think the proper response, again, the proper response is to say that, you know, during World War II, which was an overwhelming moment, an incredibly challenging moment, we had a 90, 95% tax rate on, you know, corporations and wealthy people on what we called excess profits.
Right.
In the aftermath of World War II, it actually rose to 92% tax rate in 1952, 1953 under Dwight Eisenhower. Eisenhower took it down. He was a centrist conservative Republican in some ways, took it down to 91%. And so I'm a generous guy. I'm not going to ask for more than Eisenhower did.
Right.
So I'm saying let's take 91% of the excess profits, excess wealth that billionaires got during this period, and let's take that back. Let's put it to work to give people health care, housing, to reward the essential workers.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that's just the starting point of the accountability that we need for what has happened over the last 2 years.
Absolutely. And you know what? They should have done it voluntarily. I mean, if they were good citizens, let alone good corporate citizens, they would say the billionaires. What are they called?
The patriotic
billionaires. Tax me what you're supposed to tax me. I want to pay what I deserved, what I should be paying. You know, a week ago, last Tuesday, I interviewed Peter S. Goodman of the New York Times, who's got a new book out called Davos Man, How the Billionaires Devoured the World. And that's sort of a good jumping off point for your book, because it seems like you're both attacking the same subject from a different place. He's coming from the top down. You maybe are coming from the bottom up, showing that how Americans are being hurt by this, and the rich just keep getting richer and seem oblivious to what the rest of us are going through. Otherwise, how can you justify the billionaire space race? I was, agog at seeing people salivating over these launches, and I'm going, this is excess obscenity. This is, it just should not be happening. Where could that money be better spent? I have a lot of ideas.
They could still go into space with the money they had before the pandemic.
That's right.
Right. But because they made such excess profit, because they made so much more than they needed, these were casual acts. And we're talking a lot about the billionaires. That's one of the focuses of the book. Another is on the pharmaceutical companies, which again, could have said, look, we're incredibly wealthy company. These are incredibly wealthy companies. This is a global crisis. Vaccines are not, historically have not been a big profit center for pharmaceutical companies. They make their money on things that you use daily and stuff like that. But we're going to throw in and do this because this is the moral and proper place for a corporation in these times. Well, of course they didn't say that. And at this point, the vaccine companies are making Pfizer, Moderna, and their AstraZeneca are making, but just Pfizer, Moderna, they're making $1,000 a second. Banking $1,000 a second, $65,000 a minute, $93 million a day.
Wow.
That's what they're making right now. And they're refusing to provide vaccines to developing countries and places around the world that need them. They want to share their information. I mean, this is absurd. Again, they have made astronomical additional wealth in this period and have not faced any kind of accountability. And so what I do in the book, in chapter after chapter, whether I'm looking at politicians, whether I'm looking at corporations, whether I'm looking at individual billionaires, I generally start with someone who isn't wealthy. A working class person like Mike Jackson. This guy I start the book out with. A guy with a large family working at a Briggs & Stratton plant in a suburb of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. He was labeled an essential worker because he made lawn care products. In a pandemic hitting in winter, somehow we had to be making, like leaf blowers and things like that. So he had to come into work every day. He said in the first stages of the pandemic, look, this isn't safe. He and his fellow workers said, we need protections. We work at machines where we're facing one another. We need screens between us. We need masks. We need all of this. The company did not respond quickly or efficiently. And Mike Jackson got sick. He went home, and because he's supporting a large family and there wasn't protections made for essential workers, he went back into work. He finally collapsed at his machine, was taken to a hospital, and died.
Yeah.
And this guy didn't have to die.
No.
And that's how I start one chapter. Another one, I start with a woman in the Dakotas who was working in a meatpacking plant. She worked in the largest beef jerky plant in America, right? And and young mother of kids, you know, going in. This is the job she has. She needs the work. She's told it's essential because we got to have, you know, beef jerky or whatever. And she died. And I can tell you again and again and again, there are human beings who knew they were in unsafe situations and went into those situations, not always happily, but they did their jobs, right? And they didn't make it through.
Wow.
It's my view that those politicians who failed to protect them, and that those CEOs who failed to protect them, and that those billionaires who made a fortune during this period need to be held to account. Taxation is one route. So is increased regulation on business. So is accountability for political players. And I'll say one bottom line thing, Nicole. I think that those who mismanaged the pandemic, be they Democrats or Republicans, mm-hmm. and that's include Andrew Cuomo, who messed up a lot.
And you have a chapter on him too. Yep.
Those who failed us during this pandemic, at the very least, they shouldn't, if they're in politics, they shouldn't be in politics anymore.
I agree.
These are not people who should be in positions of power.
Right. You also have Rahm Emanuel in there. That time, Rahm Emanuel offshored America's ability to fight a pandemic. And for that, he was rewarded as ambassador of Japan. What the hell?
Right. Nobody's being punished.
No.
Nobody's being held to account. And Nicole, I wrestled with this a lot as I was writing the book, because I wondered why this is. You know, why do we live in a country where there's such impunity, where if you're a powerful or wealthy person, you think that if a pandemic comes your way, instead of, you know, feeling a deep sense of moral duty, you're like, how can I make a buck?
Yeah.
How can I advance myself politically? Which is certainly Donald Trump's response to this thing.
That's right.
And the answer to it is that we don't have accountability. And so they look back in the past and they say, well, other people did bad stuff. Nobody got held to account. Why should I worry about this? And so my argument is, and why I wrote the book, is to say that at this critical stage, we're 2 years into this. This thing isn't over. It's an ongoing challenge. There's a lot of people who've screwed up. There are other people who will screw up going forward. I understand that. But this is a good point to pause and say that we need a great big dose of accountability in this country.
We absolutely do. But John Nichols, this is where I go back to opposite world. Perfect example, Bill Maher. I don't know if you happened to watch it Friday night, but if you didn't, you're one of the lucky ones. He and Barry Weiss go on and say, I'm done. I'm done with it. We're sick of it. It's over. It's not over. People are dying. And then he goes and touts Florida and said AOC went down there and she had a great time. She caught COVID. He conveniently never brought that up. But she got infected down here. This is not a good place to be. We have a crazy governor who, thankfully, you deal with in the book in a chapter called Ron DeSantis' Imperial Overreach. But you've also got a senator in Wisconsin where you live. The chapter devoted to Ron Johnson is called Have Another Shot of Hydroxychloroquine, Ron Johnson. Mm-hmm. The crazy, there's no end to it. And the positioning of you're wrong. You know, you're listening to the wrong people. Listen to us. And, you know, that's, I think, the big problem, that we have these propaganda outlets pushing lies and calling it news.
Well, there's a lot of that. And you're right. I deal a little with the media in the book as well. And look, I understand that people get sick of it, you know, not just get sick physically from it, but are sick and tired of this long period. And it certainly changed my life. It's changed my daughter's life. She's lost. She's a high school student, mm-hmm. right?
Oh.
And she has not had, you know, they didn't have a prom this year, oh, right? There's right. a lot of stuff that people missed out on. And yet, you know, she was off to school today, you know, to the student council meetings and all the things. And she's doing her job. She's doing, you know, her role in society. And a lot of us are tired of things and sick of things and stuff like that, but we're mature. Mm-hmm. Now, anyway, my daughter is a teenager, but she's a lot more mature than these folks who say, oh, I'm just done with it.
Right.
She doesn't not wear her mask. She doesn't stop worrying about the other kids in school. And I guess my frustration with this is that the adults have stopped being adults. The people who are in positions of power, presidents, President Trump, members of the cabinet, people like Betsy DeVos and others, they look at a situation like this, and instead of saying, you know, boy, we've got, this is serious, we've got to kind of lead here, we've got to do the right thing. They say, well, how can we advance our political agenda? How can we come out ahead? And the chapter on Betsy DeVos was a particularly striking one because in the midst of the debate about school reopening, Betsy DeVos's immediate reaction was, there's some private schools that have reopened. There's public schools that are resistant to reopening in places like Florida. Maybe we should just move the money to the private schools.
Oh my
God. That's what she's always wanted.
Of course.
Right?
Yep.
And so that's disaster capitalism.
Well,
right?
This is the shock doctrine. And you write
exactly
about that. That Naomi Klein told us a decade ago, this is what they do. And here it is on a huge global scale. We've all seen it play out, and it's still happening.
Every day. And so my argument is, and what I argue in the book, and I come back to again and again, is that I'm not here to punish people who made mistakes. If somebody said, you don't need a mask, well, I guess you do need a mask. And you sincerely said, I understand that. We all make mistakes. I recognize that. I can see things that President Biden has done that he could have done better. Mm-hmm. And he would acknowledge that. That's not the point of my book. The point of my book is people who deliberately lied to us, mm-hmm. who deliberately refused to protect us, and who deliberately cashed in and made massive profits when they could have done a much more humane and responsible approach. And because I don't think we have to punish everybody. That's not my point. I don't want to punish people who made mistakes. What I want to do is hold to account those who, in the course of a pandemic, made things worse, so much worse that The Lancet, the healthcare journal,
right,
tells us that in the first year of the pandemic, 40% of the deaths in the United States did not need to occur.
Yep.
So if you're in a family, right, and, you know, tragically, and we had cases of this where both your parents died, right, both your elderly
yep.
parents died, there's a good chance one of them didn't have to die.
Yeah.
Now, that's a almost a crass way of putting it, and I don't want to be casual or glib about this, but when you're saying that 40% of the deaths didn't need to occur, that means that, you know, if you run into five people, right, who are sick, two of them shouldn't be dead today.
Right, right. No. But John, here's my problem with, you know, the dilemma that I see, which is you got half of the country or 40% of the country, whatever, pointing a finger at Dr. Fauci and saying he needs to be locked up. Well, no, he's the hero in this, and they're vilifying him. And that's when I talk about opposite world again. The fact that they're blaming Dr. Fauci, who's been nothing but trying to cure us of this pandemic and has been doing it his entire adult life, there's something seriously wrong in the zeitgeist.
Well, and in fact, Fauci is a very good example of this. He's made mistakes.
Of course.
There's no doubt.
We all have.
And he has acknowledged them. You know, and he's been challenged on it. And this goes back all through. Why? Because he's a scientist.
Right.
Right?
That's how scientists work.
Science.
Trial and error, and you learn, you move forward.
Exactly. When something is very, very difficult, you try to address it. Your initial effort to address it may not be perfect, but if you're sincerely trying, then you try again, you get better, you get clarity. This is logical, it's scientific, it's the way we're supposed to deal with problems. And frankly, in the book, I interviewed political leaders from around the world. And what I can tell you is, in other countries, people like the Prime Minister of Iceland, which has been incredibly successful in dealing mm-hmm. with COVID. Prime Minister of Iceland was asked, how do you handle your press conferences? Do you go out daily and tell people, you know, what to do and stuff like this? And she says, well, I attend the press conferences, but I usually push the scientists and the medical people up front because
right.
they know what to do. And the same with Angela Merkel in Germany. They were very, very successful in the early stages of the pandemic. They've had their challenges, ups and downs. We acknowledge that. But far less of a level of death. And the question was, well, why were they successful? Well, because they were trusted. Mm. Honestly, That's one of the biggest realities is that, you know, it was clear that they weren't putting out information because it was an election year and they wanted to get ahead. They weren't putting out information because this might help their son-in-law to profit or their, you know, someone else to make a buck. They were telling people to do things because they believed and generally were correct that this was the best thing to do to avoid getting sick and dying.
Right.
And in the United States, particularly during the first year of the pandemic, we had a political leadership that simply didn't do that and created a circumstance through lies, admitted lies, by the way. Donald Trump admitted that he lied about the pandemic and he lied about the threat. Through deliberate misdeeds and deliberate, wrong approaches, wrong actions, and through malfeasance. I mean, can you imagine? Think about this. Think about any country in the world where you are faced with a pandemic. It's incredibly deadly. People are literally, you know, they're putting trucks next to hospitals for the bodies, right?
Right. I mean,
overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And so the president of that country takes his, you know, dim-witted son-in-law and puts him in charge of, you know, the supply chain. That's what happened in America.
That's right.
Jared Kushner was put in charge of figuring out how to get people the supplies they needed at critical stages. It was such a disaster, his so-called Operation Air Bridge, that eventually, you know, before it was shut down after a couple of months, it was faced with, you know, congressional inquiries, legal challenges, and everything. Why? Because Kushner and his college roommate came up with a plan to, you know, use U.S. tax dollars to help corporations import safety gear, which they then sold, which they didn't, you know what I mean? It's like, if you step back and look at this, you realize that we have just been through a period where unimaginably through the looking glass, opposite world responses to a mm-hmm. crisis have created a situation where hundreds of thousands of people who didn't need to die died, where millions of people have suffered economic and personal challenges. And it is not just appropriate, it is necessary that we have an accountability moment. Our Congress should be investigating this just as aggressively as they investigate January 6th. And believe me, you know me well, Nicole, I'm not somebody who diminishes January 6th at all. It's vital. We have to investigate it. But we should be able to do two things at once. And we should be investigating the coronavirus criminals and the pandemic profiteers.
I fully agree. And a good place to start is with the book. It's officially out tomorrow. It's called Coronavirus Criminals and Pandemic Profiteers: Accountability for Those Who Caused the Crisis. John Nichols, it is always a pleasure and an honor to have you here. I always appreciate your time. I thank you so much.
I appreciate the depth of your questions and the depth of your caring. And thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. Happy New Year. Look forward to talking again soon. Thanks, John. Bye-bye. Find John Nichols, of course, at The Nation. He is on the Twitters at Nichols Uprising. I'll put links to everything on the blog where I post the show. And with that, we're done for today. As usual, I will leave you with the news. Thank you for listening. We'll continue tomorrow because heaven knows there's no shortage of stuff to talk about. And this is not going anywhere. Oh, man. All right. Laffy's here tomorrow. We've got a really good week coming up, by the way. So anyway, I'll leave you with the news. It goes like this.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
The U.S. is amplifying calls for Russia to stop its aggressive actions along the Ukrainian border. And the State Department on Sunday recommended that all U.S. citizens leave Ukraine due to the threat of invasion by Russia, who've already deployed 100,000 troops near its border with Ukraine. The State Department had earlier told the families of embassy personnel to leave. In 2014, Russia seized and annexed Crimea, and Britain said over the weekend that Moscow is now planning to install a pro-Russian regime in Ukraine. A U.S. National Security Council spokesperson called the alleged plot deeply concerning. Moscow called the allegation, quote, ridiculous.
But U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken warned on Sunday that there would be a severe response by the U.S. and its allies if, quote, a single additional Russian force enters Ukraine in an aggressive way. In preparation for a possible invasion, the U.S. sent Ukraine a second weapons supply shipment of close to 200,000 pounds of lethal aid. Some political leaders, including Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, are urging the U.S. and its allies to penalize Moscow with sanctions now before any lives are lost. The Biden administration and its NATO allies are instead focused on bolstering troop levels in the region to support Eastern European and Baltic allies. The New York Times reporting that top Pentagon officials have presented the president with options to send, quote, several thousand U.S. troops, as well as warships and aircraft to NATO allies in the Baltic and Eastern Europe. Stay tuned. Braving the cold. Protesters marched along the National Mall in Washington, D.C. on Sunday in opposition to government-mandated COVID-19 vaccinations. Organizers of the rally said they were protesting mandates, not the vaccines themselves. Sure. The demonstration came as the Biden administration is calling for more Americans to get vaccines and booster shots to help curb the spread of the highly infectious Omicron variant, which has made so many workers sick that many businesses are struggling to stay open. Just last week, the administration opened the covidtest.gov site for Americans to request four tests to be sent to their homes. This week, they're beginning distributing 400 million free N95 masks. This is the latest federal step aimed at reining in the spread of COVID-19. These masks, by the way, are coming from the Strategic National Stockpile. They'll be made available at many local pharmacies and community health centers. This is about half of the 750 million N95 masks currently stored in the reserve. The move comes as the U.S. grapples with an unprecedented surge in COVID-19 cases due to the Omicron variant. But there's potentially good news on the horizon. Dr. Fauci saying on Sunday that the COVID-19 Omicron wave was peaking nationally, but he warned Americans not to get overconfident. Fauci said that he hoped that in a few weeks, the level of infection would fall below the, quote, area of control, where the virus will still be around, but won't, quote, disrupt society. Fingers crossed. Daily new infections have begun falling in the Northeast and Midwest. Nationwide, totals are declining, though they still remain more than double last winter's peak. Hospitalizations and deaths appear to be leveling off, although there could be, quote, a bit more pain and suffering with hospitalizations in areas with low vaccination and booster rates. Turning to the select committee investigating what happened on January 6th, we now learn from Benny Thompson, the chair of the committee, that they've already spoken with former Attorney General William Barr. Benny Thompson on Face the Nation was asked about a draft executive order given to the then president seeking to have the Defense Department seize voting machines following his loss to President Biden in the 2020 election. Thompson said, quote, "We're concerned that our military was part of this big lie on promoting that the election was false. So if you're using the military to potentially seize voting machines, even though it's a discussion, the public needs to know," end quote. Barr resigned in December of 2020 after rebuking Trump's false claims about widespread election fraud. Several news outlets reported on the draft order last week. It was among the Trump White House documents the National Archives handed over after the Supreme Court turned down Trump's request to keep them secret. Separately, Boris Epstein, an advisor to Trump's 2020 presidential campaign, acknowledged late last week that he was part of the effort to prop up so-called alternate electors to support Trump in key states. Former Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani supervised that effort, according to three sources with direct knowledge of the scheme. It involved helping pro-Trump electors access state Capitol buildings, drafting language for fake electoral certificates to send to the federal government, and finding replacements for electors who refused to go along with the plot. Amazing. Oi, she's back.
They're our next door neighbors, and you can actually see Russia from land here in Alaska.
former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin filed a defamation lawsuit against the New York Times. Well, the trial is supposed to begin on Monday. Palin, the 2008 Republican vice presidential nominee, has accused the Times of falsely linking her to the 2011 Arizona mass shooting that left six people dead and then Congresswoman Gabby Giffords seriously wounded. The Times said in a 2017 editorial that Palin's political action committee had incited the violence. Palin says the Times and former editorial page editor James Bennett defamed her. She's requesting unspecified damages and has argued in court papers that the editorial cost $421,000 in damage to her reputation. To win, Palin has to show that the editorial was written with, quote, actual malice toward her. But late-breaking development, oops, she did it again. Sarah Palin tested positive for COVID again. This may delay the start of the trial. In Minnesota today, three former police officers who helped Derek Chauvin restrain George Floyd on that Minneapolis street back in May of 2020 are set to stand trial in a federal courtroom for violating Floyd's civil rights. The three officers previously pleaded not guilty to the federal charges, while Chauvin admitted guilt in December as part of a plea deal. The Arizona Democratic Party announced over the weekend that it has formally censured Senator Kyrsten Sinema after she voted to maintain the Senate's filibuster rules, effectively blocking Democrats' voting legislation, a key priority for the party. The symbolic gesture from the Arizona Democrats adds to the mounting pressure Sinema's facing from those in her state who helped her flip a Senate seat in 2018. Sinema, who began her career as a progressive, has been a target of the left during Biden's administration for her stances. Sinema and Joe Manchin of West Virginia were the only two Democrats to join all Republicans in voting to maintain the Senate's 60-vote threshold to overcome a filibuster on voting rights legislation. And finally, some late-breaking news Monday morning. The Supreme Court announced that it will hear two cases that present an existential threat to affirmative action in university admissions. Lower courts found that both of these schools complied with Supreme Court precedents that said race may be used as one factor universities can consider in a wide-ranging evaluation of applicants. These cases most likely will be heard in the term that begins in October. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is fully listener-supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.